You said you had a therapist, Shama?
We are there.
I've had a therapist for 16 years.
Did you?
Yeah, we are live. We're live.
Okay.
Hey. Out there in the world, I'm just going. I got to cut off the music. We'll let some people come on first.
Before.
Then we'll get it started. And go from there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, made us bigger. Yay. Woo! What a day. How y'all doing?
I've been working double triple time.
Yeah.
What'd you say, Shama?
I've been working double triple time trying to keep my people here safe.
I understand. I told Charlie last week, I said, I think I'm busier, if that's even possible.
I know. I said that too. I know. So anyway, hey guys out there, I see you guys coming online. What's happening? Oh, my good people. We have Bishop Sharma Lewis with us tonight, who just happens to be my sister, along with the Dr. R.G. Allen Wilson back in the house. So yay, welcome to the show, everybody.
Ooh.
How are we gonna do it tonight? We're gonna do. So everybody out there in the world of in the quarantine world, yes, you got.
Yes.
Ready to transitions and courageous conversations. We have the therapist and we have the bishop online tonight to get us right and get our minds right since we're in this quarantine world. So I thought it would be great based on the fact that, of course, I have my lovely sister. And Bishop Sharma Lewis, why don't you tell everybody about you and your background, and then we'll let RG inform everybody of who she's at. Who is she?
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you, little brother, as I always call you. And also, I am just blessed to be on this Facebook Live with Dr. R.G. Allen, Courageous Conversation, my Sarah
Wilson.
What I'd just like to quickly share, I am Bishop Sharma Lewis. I am the resident bishop of the Richmond Episcopal area of the United Methodist Church. I am responsible in my Episcopal area. I am blessed to have 1,623 clergy, 1,160 churches, and I am responsible for 331,000 laity that make up the Virginia Annual Conference or the Richmond Episcopal area. Very quickly, I was the first African-American woman elected in the Southeastern jurisdiction. As a bishop in 2016. And so I've been here now going on my fourth year, and I'm just blessed to be on this Facebook Live because I think that we need to tell our people that there is nothing wrong with therapy and God connection together. So
right.
I'm excited about this conversation.
Sounds good. Dr. RG?
Yes. So I'm excited too. Oh my goodness, this is the connection here. Which of course, Shamra and I have been talking. Charlie is one of my dearest friends and my brother from another mother, as I call it. And Shamra, you and I have been connected, I think, from day one. We just mm-hmm. didn't really know it until we started talking a couple of months ago. And so I'm just excited. I am. Dr. R.G. Allen Wilson, I am the founder and CEO of Faith Inc., stands for Family and Individual Therapeutic Healing. I also am the co-founder of Connections Matter, LLC with my husband, Morgan E. Wilson, Jr. I spent a lot of time at Drexel University. I was the director of clinical training there and got my master's and my PhD there. So I had been there for 22 years until last year when I transitioned into practice. I had been in practice, but not scaling it out. And so my husband, Morgan, does all the sales and marketing, and we do our ministry, as we call it, together. So I spend some time doing that. And then, as I was saying to you all, I've been busier now than before this happened. But then I also spend a lot of time doing media. So I tend to be on the Today Show or Mel Robbins or Tamron Hall. Recently, actually tomorrow morning, I'll be on CNN on New Day at 7:45 talking about the anxiety that we're dealing with. And I'll also be on CBS, I think it's 6:15 or something like that. And then I'll be on a podcast at 4 o'clock with Jackie Reed. That's all tomorrow, in the midst of seeing clients all day in between. So we'll see what I mean. But you know what? When God calls you, you answer.
Let him use you.
Won't he do it?
Won't he do it?
You know, did it. I want to start out because I think what a lot of people get confused is you can't have a therapist or have people believe you can't practice religion and also see a therapist. So, Sharma, take it away from there and give me your thoughts on that.
Well, I'm from a personal perspective. I have had a therapist for 16 years. I was an associate pastor and senior associate, and then I became a senior pastor. And I always thought that, you know, when I was an associate, the weight of the world, the weight of the church was not on me, so I didn't need a therapist. I would wait until I became a senior pastor. So I did not have a therapist as an associate pastor, but when I became a senior pastor in 2004, I sought out a therapist. And so I've even had people to say, you shouldn't tell people that. People are going to think that you're weak. That you should, you know, that's something that we do. We refer, we don't go. And what I found out.
When I say we,
African-Americans.
Okay.
We African-Americans, because for whatever reason in the African-American community, if you go to a therapist or if you talk about a therapeutic relationship, people will try to stigmatize you that you're weak. And what they don't realize is that, and I will tell folks that when you are a pastor or minister or in ministry, or I would just do a shout out just for a regular lay person, we have many, many layers of life on us, okay? Mm-hmm. And as a pastor, as associate pastor, as a senior pastor, and believe it or not, even now, I am a bishop. And I still have a therapist. My therapist actually still is in Atlanta. And when I go to Atlanta, which is a lot for meetings, I call my therapist and say, hey, I need to come.
I need a session.
But the key thing I say for me is in my therapeutic relationship, I've learned a lot about myself. When Charlie knows this, when we had unexpected death in our family, we had at one time 4 family members to die right behind each other within about 17 months. I sought out my therapist. My therapist, when I turned 50, I sought out my therapist because, you know, when you turn 50, all kind of stuff start happening. You start doubting yourself. You start wondering, you know, hey. But for me, what therapy has done through the years, and I will even say my therapist right now, when I leave my therapist, I'll give you words like this. I feel empowered. Mm. I feel equipped. I feel listened to. Mm. As a bishop, as I just shared with you all the people that I'm responsible for, I have all of their problems. I have the weight of the world. I have making decisions every day that affect lives. And so I also say to my cabinet, which are the men and women who work with me, I need a safe space to go talk about them too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. No, you do.
Confidential safe space.
I need a safe space where I can go and talk with someone, and literally they can help me process or use words like discern what I'm feeling so that I'll be a better person, a better woman, a better bishop.
Okay.
So I embrace the therapeutic relationship, and I have for, as I say, 16 years.
All right. Good explanation. I love it. Dr. RG, I know you find people because your practice is faith-based, your therapy practice. And so it's connections matter. And you work with the church a lot and you see a lot of people through your church. So I can only imagine that there are times where people come to you from the church or they don't want the church people to know, the church people don't want you to know, or the other people in the church to know that they're seeking out a therapist. Mm-hmm. So how do you overcome that with them? How do you approach them? How do you calm them down and say it's okay? From your perspective, how do you see that relationship with the church and
with the church? Well, interesting enough, that was what my whole dissertation was about. I looked at the attitudes, values, and beliefs of parishioners, of congregants, and in particular of church leaders, and the transmission of those beliefs as it relates to mental health seeking behavior. So I took a whole mega church, the mega church with it, and the largest mega church in Philadelphia, and then I asked some of the clergy and the leaders within the church to give me their ideas and views about mental health seeking behavior, because I'm a church girl. I grew up in the church, and I understood that, you know, we have problems just like anybody else. So why isn't there a collaboration between the church or any other faith-based organization and the clinical world? Dr. Evans, who used to be the head of CBH here, he used to say that with that, in every faith-based organization, there are going to be some therapists. There are going to be some therapeutic mental health professionals, if you will. And within every mental health facility, there are going to be some spiritual people. So why aren't we talking to each other? Why aren't we collaborating? And the answer that we came up with is that there's a lot of cultural mistrust. There is a lot of secrecy. We know secrets keep you sick. There's a lot of stigma in the African-American community. You all know this language that, you know, you don't air your dirty laundry in public, right? Mm-hmm. And we kind of keep all this stuff to us. And rightfully so in many cases, to be honest, because mental health institutions haven't treated us very well over the years. When we did end up getting therapy, it was because it was mandated or was forced. We didn't really get the services and the treatment that our white brothers and sisters got. We didn't get that stellar treatment that we so richly deserved as well. And as a result, it created a lot of cultural mistrust. So where are we now? We are at the place where Bishop Sharma can talk about having therapy, a therapist. You can have therapy and a therapist and Jesus at the same time. You really can. And at our practice in Philadelphia, Faith Inc. stands for Family and Individual Therapeutic Healing. So while I say I'm not a Christian, a Christian therapist, I am a Christian and I do therapy. But I also work with anybody that comes through my door that I think that I can help, no matter what religious affiliation that they have, because the truth is that we all bleed, we all breathe, we all have issues. Nobody's exonerated from those issues. And so my goal, I said when I first went to school, is that can I take what I've learned in the secular institution and can I use it for the people as a ministry? Because people come to us with deep pain. And we're in deep pain right now when I'm sure we're going to talk about the losses that people are experiencing, both in the life that they once knew 3 weeks ago and possibly someone that we know that is coming down with this disease, this virus, impacted or affected by it, or losing their life behind it. So when people are experiencing this, you do need a professional someplace that you can go that's safe. And I also would never go to a therapist that didn't have a therapist. So just like Bishop Sharma, I got my own therapist, someone that I seek out, because if you're not healthy, how are you going to help someone else?
Right. This is very true. Very true. Very true.
You can have Jesus and a therapist.
Right. And I'll also say this, Charlie, that therapy and religion or therapy and faith, they complement each other. They shouldn't cancel each other out. They shouldn't, as I say, we come away with the stigma that something must be wrong with you. Because I'm going to be also honest with you, a lot of times in our churches, we try to over-spiritualize. Mm-hmm. And we have people who have deep-rooted problems and pain. And I think that's where a pastor has to use the wisdom to know when you utilize the Jesus.
Right.
And when you need to refer. And even refer to the fact of not only to a therapist, maybe even to a psychiatrist. Because we have people in our churches, in our communities, that are going through many, many things. And what they will try to do, they will try to pray it away or fast it away, and they still have the pain. And they are still dealing with the issues. And what they need is to go to that next step. They need to go to the Dr. Arges, who are trained in those specific areas. And so you can utilize both. It does not have to be either or both. Yeah. It can be both together.
Right.
I want to say, you know, to piggyback on that just for a minute, it's okay to ask for help. Yeah. I think that's the other piece, that when we start having emotional issues or psychological issues or relationship issues, you know, we say, well, just go to Jesus. But if we had a broken arm and we went to our pastor or our bishop, they might pray, and then they're going to take us to the ER so that we can get a cast, right?
Exactly.
So why not, if we have these issues, would they not then refer us to a therapist?
It's true. It's true. Well, let's keep it moving because we want to keep it going. And like you said, y'all both touched on it in a roundabout way, because a lot of people do think if you go see a therapist, or if you are spiritual in that way, does it mean that you're weak? You know, if you're a religious person and if you go see a therapist, a lot of people think that. And I know that based on the fact that when you talk to people out there, a lot of people will say, well, I don't need to go see no therapist. You know, I'm just going, like you say, I'm going to pray it away, or, you know, I'm going to go to God in prayer. And that's good. But then also too, like you say, you got to take it one step further. So with all this going on in the world today, we got, you know, this pandemic has really caused a lot of anxiety. There are some people, you know, that's losing, you know, their income and maybe losing their job, their title, their position in life, and how they see themselves in the world. So they don't feel like they can contribute to anything. So a lot of people are going to be like, hey, you know what? I want to just cancel my life and go out, and suicide rates will go up. Mm-hmm. You also see there's a lot of abuse that's happening in the household now because people mm-hmm. are locked in the house right now. And in all of that too, there's a lot of sadness because you can't grieve with your loved ones with this coronavirus. And so sometimes you're seeing your loved one on, you know, by FaceTime phone, and that might be the last time that you get to actually see someone that you truly love. So RG, I'll go to you first. Have you started witnessing the anxiety and starting to see, because you are, like you say, you take clients during the day and you're busier now, probably now than ever before. Where is the pain residing right now? What are you seeing mostly right now in your practice?
Yeah, what's trending is the uncertainty. So the anxiety is on fleek now, because the anxiety comes from the worry, it comes from uncertainty, it comes from fear, it comes from unknown, the unknowns. Like I said, people are grieving the loss. When you talk about the five stages of grief, you're talking about denial, which we all were probably in. Oh, this is, you know, it's okay. You know, I remember doing some media engagements and Charlie was like, too close, you know, because we were sort of in denial. And then you go to, okay, anger. Well, why is this really happening? And then some bargaining. I'm sure Bishop Sharma has had parishioners talking about the bargaining with God. Like, if I do this, if I do the right thing, would you bring my loved one back or change the situation? And then going to depression and then possibly acceptance. But then they've added a sixth stage, which is the anticipatory grief, which I think is what a lot of people are experiencing now. They're anticipating what's going to happen, but unclear, because we don't have all the facts, because this is all new. This virus is new. This pandemic is new. Mm-hmm. No one, unless you're 102 and you were here during the Spanish flu, no one has, that I know of, that has experienced a pandemic before. So none of us knew exactly what to do. And we're now anticipating when the next shoe is going to drop, when the next piece of information is going to come that tells us it's a new number of people dying. And then many people, quite frankly, for the anxiety, it's causing them to have tension in their homes. So you do see the elevation of the domestic violence. We are concerned about the kids who are out of school and they were in situations already that weren't good, and now they don't have a particular escape. We are seeing elevations of addiction. We're seeing elevation of people who are now, my clients are having panic attacks. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually getting them back to the basics of what do you do? Start breathing, like literally breathe, because these people who are sick that are getting this virus, they're dying because they can't breathe. This virus is attacking their lungs, developing pneumonia, which is fluid in the lungs, and it's stiffening them up where they can't breathe. So what I'm saying to people is, maybe what we're now learning is there were a lot of things that we were taking for granted prior to this, like the ability to breathe, not a deep breath, not just a shallow breath. Start breathing so that you can sort of calm yourself down. Start doing some mindfulness, meaning don't focus on the past and what you didn't do or the future of the unknown. Mindfulness, the here and the now, so that we can sort of begin to recalibrate and begin to accept our new norm and then start working with that new norm. That's what I'm telling people, because if we don't recalibrate, if we don't adapt to this new norm and start coming up with a new way of accepting our reality, then we're going to stay stuck in the past. And that's going to create even more anxiety. Does that make sense?
Perfect sense. And it's true. Sharma, what are you seeing from, because you being a bishop, what are you seeing from your DS and their members? And is it, does this correlate? Does this sound familiar with what RG just said? And how are you telling them to go to the flock and talk to the people to tell them what they could do from a spiritual standpoint?
Okay. Well, first of all, let me give you some terminology, because I know people are saying DS, what's that? A DS is a district superintendent. Right. The district superintendent, basically, I work with a cabinet. My cabinet is made up of 16 district superintendents. And in the Methodist Church, basically, the polity hierarchy is pastor, district superintendent, and then bishop. So my cabinet or district superintendents, we work together. And so basically, like, for example, right now, every morning at 8:15, I am having cabinet meetings where normally we would meet once a month. So I felt that it was more important for me to make sure that I had a frontline touch base with my district superintendents, because then the district superintendents are relating then to the pastors. The pastors then are relating to the flock, the people that's sitting in the pews. Well, the thing about it is right now, when as a bishop, I have to make sure, as I keep saying to my district superintendent for the Virginia Conference, it's over 331,000 people, I want to make sure that my people are informed first and safe. And actually they really go together. I want people to be informed and safe. And that's what I've been saying. Well, one of the things that Dr. Arjun just said is that, my responsibility is to lead the annual conference, but the DSs are really, the district superintendents are the front line. They're the ones that are relating to the clergy. So one of the things that I'm first of all doing is making sure that my cabinet is okay. I'm asking the question, how is it with your soul? And then as they are meeting with their pastors, they can have in a district, they can have some 45, 60, 70, depending on how large is the geographical realm of the district. So the district superintendents are having those conversations. They're having the conversations by Zoom, of course, because we cannot see each other. And they are also asking the question, how is it with your soul? In the United Methodist Church, with our polity, we appoint and reappoint every year. So I have pastors that are nervous right now about their appointment that would normally come in June. And what I mean by appointment, where they will move to their next church. So you have that anxiety. With that breeds more anxiety. You have spouses. Trying to figure out their jobs. If they are a pastor that's moving, you have your spouse maybe have to change job if you move from a total different district. You have children that are going to a new school. People are trying to figure out, should they buy a house? Should they not buy a house? And so you're having all of this anxiety, as Dr. RG says. So I'm dealing with the same thing. It's just in the spiritual realm. We're dealing with anxiety. We're dealing with the uncertainty. We're dealing with the unknown. And one thing that I will tell you, the coronavirus has no timeline. We are watching this and monitoring this. I had to make a very quick decision starting in March 15th. And now today I had to also change from March 15th to April 30th. We are not having any in-person worship.
Right.
Well, then that means my pastors have had to be creative of how you still bring the word of God to your folks. So I will say this, even with the uncertainty and the anxiety, God is also giving us some creative ways in which we are having worship.
Right, and how to connect. And so a lot of and you've seen some of these churches out here still wanting to connect, and a lot of the churches are clusters that have basically spread the virus. And so it's good that, and unfortunately we haven't, and I'm not trying to politicize this, because it's totally two separate things, but we need our leaders to really step up, and we need a national mandate so everybody could calm down and be on the same accord, because I think we're only exacerbating the virus and prolonging us not being able to go outside and play until we all act accordingly and on one accord. So with that being said, RG, with the anxiety that's building up and everything that's going around and the uncertainty of knowing, when you are in a session with someone who may have lost their job or they know they're losing their job, how do you kind of reposition them at this point in time? I mean, it is a little early. We're just kind of like really 2 to 3 weeks in, depending on where you live, with this new normal. So how are you leading people through this? Take us through the mind of a therapist. What would I get if I came to you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that there's some just practical stuff, right? So and Bishop Sharma mentioned it, like the safety, right? So we focused first on safety. If you're doing the necessary things right now to be safe, right? And even if that feels uncomfortable, we begin to talk about, well, okay, this is temporary inconvenience for long-term gain. So as long as you're safe, then we can work through anything else. Everything else is recoverable if you're here, right? Mm-hmm. And then we begin to talk about, okay, let's externalize your feelings, because in order to heal, you have to feel, but right. You cannot feel what you don't reveal. And you really can't heal. That's a whole process. And a lot of times we want to keep everything in, but inside is where it gets real confusing and real painful, because oftentimes we're not taught both to give language to the pain that we're experiencing, naming it, that loss that people are experiencing. We also, I'm helping people to not have their TVs and their news feeds on all day. Because that's traumatic. So it's almost like watching a train wreck over and over and over. The numbers go up, the anxiety goes up. So I'm asking people to create a schedule for themselves where they watch what's going on morning, noon, maybe in the morning, 30 minutes, afternoons, 30 minutes in the evening. So therefore they can infuse these other positive things in there. And then I ask them, okay, so tell me where the anxiety is. Let's tap into it, because our anxiety resides in our body and we have to learn to externalize it. So it might be in our stomach where we're having stomach problems. It might be that we can't sleep. I had a client the other day that said, oh, I'm not really having anxiety. And then we started talking more and she was like, but the last 3 nights I had nightmares and I couldn't sleep. Mm-hmm. Oh, well then that's where your anxiety is coming. It's coming in the nightmares. So we really, I help people to create a safe environment for them to begin to process what they're feeling, what they're thinking, what their fears are. And then we come up with some tangible goals for them. What can we do that's tangible? If people are locked in the house with all their children and their spouse, right? Then, and they're not accustomed to that because they're usually out in the world and come back maybe in the evening, eat dinner, you know, go to sleep. Then how can you create a more normalized schedule for yourself so that everyone has some roles and you can take some breaks in between to reconvene, but everybody has something to do through the day.
Right.
Conversely, if you're home alone and you're feeling isolated, I'm saying to people is that social distance doesn't mean social isolation. We have these ways of connecting now through social media. Do your kids, if they're older, can your kids put you on FaceTime? Right. Can they teach you how to use this technology so that they feel better and you feel better? quite frankly, I saw this woman, there was a woman who had, that I knew, that had an 87th birthday, and her kids put balloons in front of her house and tackled her from the sidewalk. She felt connected. They felt connected. It was beautiful. And then she said, "Or the kids down the street stole her balloons." So that was a good bad kid.
That's true. That's true. Hey, one other thing, and I think what one other part of the anxiety, and I think a lot of people are dealing with, is that when you start seeing that death count so much, like you were talking about, is that people start internalizing. So every time they get a hot flat or something, they're like, oh my God, you know, and they build themselves up with thinking that they're sick. So if they get a sore throat, or if the nose is blowing, and especially down south right now, it's pollen season. So a lot of people are dealing with allergies, and so it's a misdiagnosis. So people are really freaking out. And that's why I tell people that I know, I said, you know what, some days I don't even turn on the television, you know, because you can go to Facebook now, and right on your screen, when you go up in it, it has all the stats and everything. And you can just pull up the top information, and that's enough for you. You don't need to listen to it and keep it replaying in your ear and over and over again. So, Sharma, how can you transform this pain into power?
Well, I would, or as we said tonight, part of the topic is, how do you lean on your faith?
Right.
First of all, what I would say I would ditto everything that Dr. RG is saying, and then I would add the spiritual part and what I call spiritual disciplines. Spiritual disciplines right now of prayer. And even the Word of God tells us that we should pray without ceasing. Spiritual disciplines of meditation, where cutting off the TV, because you can only take this so much. The spiritual disciplines, even, believe it or not, are fasting. And then, of course, the spiritual disciplines of Bible reading and journaling helps. Also, I sent to Charlie, and he's going to send this out. I have several scriptures that people can read that Charlie will provide at the end of this live session. Scriptures, for example, about protection, and scriptures for encouragement, scriptures for increasing your faith, or scriptures for healing, scriptures for peace. And so I have that for Facebook Live folks, just to be able to have that Bible reading. Basically, when all of this craziness is going on, we still, as I want to tell people, God is God, and God is our source. We've got to know that through it all, God knew about this coronavirus, but God is still our source. You know, one of the things that I will tell the both of you, and Dr. RG, we can even talk about this a little bit later. I've been really thinking about this whole coronavirus, and I was talking to a friend of mine this morning as I was walking, and I said, you know, God has put us on what I like to say right now, as she said, a holy hiatus. You know, and I've been asking myself, what is God saying to us as a nation? What could God be saying to us as individuals? What is God saying to us as married couples? Mm-hmm. What is God saying to us as pastors? Because we have to, for churches, we've got to do church a little differently. Yeah. What is God saying to families? So right now, where we are feeling weak, we've got to go back to those spiritual disciplines of praying and reading scripture. And not only that, believing, but along with the spiritual disciplines, if we are feeling that we need still to see someone, a therapist, a pastor, I would say to folks, please go. The spiritual disciplines of prayer, you know, there are people who say, I don't know how to pray. God doesn't care about the form of fashion. God just wants you to pray.
Right.
Spiritual discipline.
All you got to do is Psalms 23.
Right.
You know, get on your knees and just say the words. And
Lord is my shepherd.
That's all it is.
And I would even say.
I'm going to cut you off. I'm going to say this too. I mean, there are people out there, you know, that might be listening, that might not come from a Christian background or Buddhist background, Hindu, or whatever the case may be. And through this time, you might find God, or you might believe, or you might be upset also too, saying, well, how would God allow this to happen? There are a lot of people like that. But my whole thing is, we know that this is something bigger than us.
Yes.
And so with that, you know, going back to all the methods of prayer and meditation and fasting and believing in that regard, I definitely lead people there as well. Because you know what? You don't have to believe me because, yeah. You know, I'm just little old me. But I know this thing is bigger than all of us collectively. And I love what you started out saying is that there is a purpose here.
Yes, it is.
What is that purpose? Yes. And the purpose either through you finding out your best relationship with your spouse, you having a relationship with yourself, us slowing down. Mm-hmm. One thing came to me today was like, I felt as though the world was leaving me, but now I feel like the world has come back to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which me, and when I say that, I was talking to a friend about that and I was saying, I felt like everybody was just out there doing. And I'm sitting over here saying, I'm not on that speed race right now. I'm over here trying to take my time and curate my life the way I want to live my life. And as I say, my motto, love the way you live. And it seemed like the world just came down and just said, okay, well, we're going to meet you where you are right now. That's just me personally. But I felt connected in that. And I felt more connected now with everybody and friends and family and everything just by this whole experience, because now I'm picking up the phone and calling people and talking to people is something that you didn't do before.
You know, another thing, you know, I would also say we have to realize that we are right now in the whole Lenten season, and the whole Lent season started at Ash Wednesday. It ends on Holy Saturday, right before Easter. And of course, we know that in this Lenten season for Christians, we are going through reenacting what happened through the whole Jesus experience and Jesus' life and death and resurrection. But also through this Lenten season for Christians, we're in a phase of forgiveness and renewal and repentance and going through those processes. I just find it kind of interesting from the spiritual that this is happening right now in the Lenten season, right before Easter. Now, we know what happens on Easter for the Christian. We know that Easter is what? Jesus Christ was what? Resurrected. But right. So we also got to know that we're going to get out of this. We will be resurrected. And, you know, we started this year of, oh my God, January 1, 2020, new year, new decade. Well, we didn't realize quickly how it was going to turn. But, you know, the one plug that I would just say to folks, know that we will get through this and we will be resurrected. And every Sunday is a resurrection day. And so I think for all of us, whether you're Christian, whether you're Hindu, Muslim, we have to know that one day we're going to get out of this. One day we're going to be renewed, rebirthed. All of that. And I think that in this time, you know, it's like something your mama used to say, or our mama used to say, go somewhere and sit out. I thank God. America, go somewhere. In the sitting down, people are discovering things about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder, fully agree with everything that you all are saying. And I've been thinking about that myself, that we had gotten pretty dark in this world, right? And there was lots of dissension and vitriol and ugliness and hatred.
Yes.
And, you know, as
a lack of humanity.
As a Christian myself, this belief in love and light and energy had become dim. And what you would see is just darkness in a lot of places and spaces. Mm-hmm. And even the people that I knew to be light and energy had kind of almost like something else had come over them. And I'm like, why are you cussing that person out on Facebook? That's not very nice. You know, because we had this kind of access to one another. So I do believe, you know, that what you both are talking about, and in particular, Bishop Sharma, you're talking about this reconnection, this rebirth, this reconnection with ourselves, this reconnection with each other. Mm-hmm. Connections matter. Having, of course, I would say the courageous conversations about our connection with each other, because we're all human beings, and we're spiritual beings having a human experience.
Oh, no.
And so the spiritual connection is all omnipresent. Right. And so that's why we feel such despair when we're seeing such pain. Right. Yet on the other end of that, which we know we're going to grow through this, the question is not when, it's how.
Right.
How will we grow through this and come out on the other side?
Will we
tap into the strength that we actually already have, which has not been really realized for many of us, but wouldn't be here in particular as Black people if we weren't strong, because we got through the Middle Passage.
You're preaching. One of the things I definitely think this does is a self-evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a self-evaluation. I think people, you know, and even through Facebook and connecting with people now and stuff, people are saying, Charlie, you know, how are you, you know, I need an exercise. I need something to do. And people are like, they just got to be busy. And I'm like, well, why you got to be busy? Just sit and be still. Because then it'll come to you. Sometimes you have to let life come to you, mm-hmm. you know. And sometimes if you sit and be still, that means if you can't sit and be still, then nobody around you can sit and be still with you. And if you don't like yourself, then nobody, how you expect someone to like you, you know. So I think this is the time for people to readjust. I always say, I do the Missy Elliott, back it up, flip it, and reverse it. Because it's time to reposition yourself, even personal. Do the self, when it's self-care, not just self-care in the thing of pampering yourself and getting your nails done and getting a massage and stuff like that. Self-care in the self of trying to understand your hurt, trying to understand why you in such pain, trying to understand your relationship that you had with your mother and father, mm-hmm. that you're 50 years old and you're still mad at them. Like, what is that about? You know, you're 50 years old. You know, you got to go through. I always say, you grow up in your life between 0 and 18. That's your control environment. And you spend the rest of your life deprogramming your environment. Mm-hmm. And that's where the church comes in. And that's where you, Dr. RG, come in when you're trying to help people to mm-hmm. get rid of those layers so they can really, truly
or
live their
really
life.
Understand them so they can let them go.
Exactly.
Because
exactly.
We are holding on to all the toxins, and that is what's actually driving us, as opposed to letting it go so that we open ourselves up to what God or, you know, the universe really has for us. So we're kind of stuck in a holding pattern, many of us, really unable to realize our full potential and really our purpose for what we're here for.
Right.
Dr. RJ, I just want to say something right there. You almost had me shouting over here. For the folks in Virginia who may be watching, when I returned after having hip surgeries, I had 4 hip surgeries for a degenerative hip disease that was totally unexpected. And as I was praying to God about how to reconnect with my annual conference, and the Lord gave me the word recalibrate. And so when you use the term recalibrate twice, I'm like, okay, God, that's more confirmation. And recalibrate is not a word that I normally use. So I remember just praying and looking up that definition. And one definition is to do something differently. And I think that with this coronavirus and our time, whether it is spiritual or whether it is seeking help, that God is challenging us as a people to do something a little bit different.
Right.
Church is doing stuff a little bit different. Right. And I don't think we're going to go backwards because we can't.
You can't.
God has given us like an open window. God is saying to us to recalibrate.
Right.
And part of that recalibrating for folks who are Christians is having the opportunity to recalibrate even within our spiritual disciplines, that praying, you know, the reading of scripture, that meditating, taking the word and really, truly meditating. And I always say to my clergy that when do you have time to just allow the Holy Spirit and the Lord to speak to you when you're not writing a sermon?
Right.
See, a lot of times we write sermons and that's our Jesus time, as I call it. That's our Bible devotion. But when do you stop, like you and Charlie are saying, when do you stop and just with yourself, with God? When are you quiet? That's part of that meditation. Taking right. in the scriptures, reading it, and being quiet and then letting the word of God speak to you. See, that's what I feel like right now, as I said jokingly, God is saying, go somewhere and sit down. This world is a hustle and a bustle.
Right.
When truly was the last time that we've ever just stayed home?
Nobody. Exactly.
And we're still.
All together? All together? Home together.
Yeah, we're
exactly.
Not talking. Yeah, when seriously was the last
people
time?
They don't even eat together. They're in the same house, they don't even eat dinner together.
Right.
We're not praying together, we're not eating together, we're not reading together, we're not doing, now we're having to do it, but even Bishop Sharma and Charlie, people are struggling. Yes. I see people struggling because I've given them last week we talked about Charlie, I've given them the tools. This is the SSR, your safety care plan, your self-care plan, and your relational care plan. Your relational care plan is what is the schedule for you and for your family? Set the structure so that you all have your rest time, your play time, your work time, right? Your free time so that you all can, your meditation, your mindfulness meditation, then your movement, exercise, and your meaningful engagement. Your music, whatever music that you want to recenter you and recalibrate again, that word. I'm saying to people, do it, but this has been an awkward transition for many of us to get back to the basics, which many of us were taught when we were little anyway. We were taught to have dinner time. We were taught to have prayer time. We were taught to get on our knees and pray before we went to bed, pray before we eat a meal. We were taught pray when we get up. We were taught these things, and then we departed because we got so busy. Use a great word, hustle. We got so busy with the hustle and bustle.
Right.
Everything is like spinning on a hamster wheel.
Well, you
and
know,
now we have to sit still.
Right, and it's interesting because there was an article that I posted on my Facebook page. It was all about Gen X and us being able to handle this crisis the best. And everybody out there who is Gen X from 1965 to 1980. And it said, we saw everything. We saw part of the civil rights movement. We went through AIDS. We went through crack epidemic. We done been through the terror attacks. We've been through everything. So now we can sit actually here, watch television. Because when we grew up, we only had three channels.
Right?
And PBS. And you went outside, you played jumping jacks, hopscotch, tag, you know, jump rope. You did that.
Better be in by the time the lights go on.
There you go. You also, in addition to that, you if you complain, ain't nobody wasn't listening to you anyway to complain. You wasn't
overscheduled. You're bored.
Right. If you were bored because you wasn't overscheduled.
That's right.
Today they have these kids and everything. I'm going to soccer practice. I'm like, why you wear yourself out? And then they come home, the parents come home and do all the chores that we did when we were growing up. I'm like, wait a minute. You know, mama always told us, why you think I had you? You the maid. That's what she used to say. She said, I got the maid. It's y'all. You know, so I mean that's how it is. So anyway, we're gonna put a ball in this, but I do want to go out to the people and see what the people are saying. And if you guys got any questions for Bishop Lewis and Dr. Argy. So any questions tonight? Any question? Let's see.
Are you on Facebook or you Facebook? We're on Facebook.
I'm on Facebook, yeah. We're not used to a lot of people. I'm so excited, blah blah blah. Anybody got questions y'all wanna ask the bishop? Y'all want to ask the bishop? Y'all can get close to God right here. Y'all can get close to God. Y'all better come on.
Silly brother.
Sharma, I'm going to talk again about how you want to lean in on your faith. How you lean in on your faith.
They want to talk, just talk a little bit more.
Talk again about how to lean on your faith in this time.
I just think that, you know, really right now and leaning on your faith because you can't go to church. There's really no excuse. And first of all, what we got to realize, church is in us anyway. You don't have to go to a physical building to have church. But what we are doing, and Charlie put this on his Facebook page, that, you know, one thing, the beauty of social media is that you can literally go all over the world and get different sermons. And have that experience. And on my Facebook page, on Charlie's Facebook page, it talks about how you are participatory on the online worship. And so, you know, first thing I would say for folks who like to worship, you have the opportunity through Facebook Live, through YouTube. Now you can download anybody, any sermon, anytime, anywhere. So that's one way. Well, if sermons don't do it for you, there is music. I will tell you that, and in my book, Journey to Transformation, there's a devotion that I talked about that during the time that I had my hip surgeries, I began to listen to music, Christian music, but I began to really listen to Christian music, realizing that for some people, they like hymns, they like contemporary. But if you listen really truly to the music is nothing but the word of God put to music.
Okay.
And so, you know, songs like 'Tis So Sweet to Trust in Jesus, you know, those songs that we used to sing now means even more, and it meant more to me in my situation, Reckless Love, all of that. Leaning into your faith right now, you've got to figure out what you need. I can't give you a formula, but what I would have to say, you have to surrender and ask God, God, what are you saying to me? You know, God, lead me to read whatever I need to read. God, what devotion that I need to have right now. God, you know, even to the fact of God, I want to yearn and learn more about you at this time. You know, we have more time now ever.
Than ever before. You can get, don't let it get distracted now. You can't, you know, God, you have time.
I tell people, let us not miss the opportunity where God is trying to speak to God's people, or wherever you are in your faith, God is trying to speak to you. And then I just want to keep saying to folks, hold on. You know that same thing that says, hold on to God's unchanging hand? God didn't change. God is still the source. God is still our rock. God is still the El Shaddai, God Almighty. And God is still a healer.
Right.
And so as we're going through this, you know, as we're going through this, I would say to folks, you know, leaning into your faith, leaning into the strength of knowing. And I would even challenge somebody, look in the word, and you will not be able to tell me where God did not bring his people through. God did not bring God's people through.
So I got another question for you. RG, what message do you have for teens who are struggling to understand what's happening?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah. I saw that one. And they said, I think that was Dieta, teens and young Katrina, adults. And there was a couple other people that asked, because people are struggling with their teens and they're struggling with their young adults. So a couple things that I think is important for young people. Young people need to know who's in charge. They may push back, but at the end of the day, as humans, we look for our leaders. We're doing that in this time of crisis right now. Charlie, your governor is thebomb.com, right? But guess what? We can all be governors in our own homes, our spiritual leaders, quite frankly. We can all then, for the parents, be able to say, like, listen, I'm in charge. We're developing a plan together for this. I'm going to protect you and provide for you and do the necessary things. And then be curious, right? You got to leave the lines of communication open. Have the courageous conversations, because here's what's going to happen with kids. Sometimes they may think that they're either upsetting you or trying to protect you, so they don't want to tap into how afraid they really are. So have regular meetings with your family to say, these are the updates, this is what's happening. Then let's talk about how you're feeling about all of these changes that are taking place. Y'all need to be doing that anyway, because we wouldn't have a major change in our jobs and never talk about it, right? You wouldn't have, Bishop Sharma, you just talked about your morning meetings with your entire cabinet so that they can go out and talk to the rest of the parishioners, right, and the leaders. So have those conversations with your young people. And quite frankly, we do need to let our young people know that even though we're in charge, we're human. So we can be vulnerable with them. Vulnerability allows, can you hear me?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I mean to cut you off, because I was just gonna add on what you said. You had said that, I think 2 weeks ago, that you need to show your kids, number one, they need one, what a lot of parents forget is that kids want discipline.
They do.
They need it. They need that structure.
They need discipline, structure, consistency, and predictability.
Exactly. And it's okay to show them, like you said, the big B word, which is vulnerability, to be able to show them all types of emotion. They need to know it's okay as a child to cry, to be mad, to pout, to do all of those things, and then also be in a loving environment where they can get healed and they can feel protected. Because I think that's what we grew up in, an era where you really didn't show so much emotion. We had to go out in the world a little cold. Some parents did, some parents didn't. But a lot of us grew up, I'm the adult, you're the child, that type of arm distance relationship.
Right.
So today, some parents are just too overbearing. Now they can't get the kids off of them, and they didn't teach the kids anything. And now the kids are just like, well, I'll just abuse you because you let me, or I want to be your friend, because it's easier to be your friend than it is to be your parent.
Right, and the parents are the parents. They're the parents. They're the ones that are in charge. They're not the peers. So, right. But the parents can say, listen, I'm scared. I'm scared too. This is new. I've not done this before, but we are going to grow through this together and be open to expressing what those feelings are. In our world, we do two emotions, mad and sad. And because we don't want to feel sad, then we just are mad. But there's so many other emotions that we can express through our vulnerability that actually builds intimacy. That's for intimacy, I say into me see. You want to tap into your kids? Show them your own vulnerability and the way in which you grew through that experience, how you dug deeper in terms of your spirituality. What was your source? How you grew through it and got to the other side of it, so that you have real examples of not only your test, but your testimony. And that's the other thing that we need to be able to share with one another, that there's going to be some testimonies that come out of this, lessons that are going to be developed that allow us to know that we're actually stronger than we realize. Mm-hmm. So for kids that, I think that's the conversation, for the kids that don't think that this is that serious, we have to level up and we have to go deeper with sharing with them that this is serious, because they actually going out could harm us.
That's right.
And vice versa. So having those real courageous conversations, sharing information, articles, or what have you, and saying, listen, this too shall pass, as Bishop Sharma says, but for right now, in this house, we have to be on the same page. Mm-hmm. Because as we create physical distance, we're actually giving permission to create intimate emotional connection. That's what's happening, that transformation. Painful, albeit, yes, but guess what? What is the alternative? It doesn't look good, the alternative to go in, and is it really worth it to go out and get your ice cream or get whatever it is that you're gonna get and expose yourself and then bring it back? And then look at what happened with the Cuomo brothers. They were in an argument, right? About where grandma was gonna go or mom was gonna go. And here now Chris Cuomo has it, and it would have been a very different conversation had he went out and mom was with him. So this is serious and we have to convey that, but try to be patient with ourselves and each other and our kids.
All right. Well, we at the 9 o'clock hour. We could go all night.
Yeah, we could.
We're not going to be able to go all night. There's some questions here that I know y'all could go on and get answered. Y'all can go on the Facebook and Velva had a question of how do you handle grief when you drop a loved one off at the hospital knowing they might not come back, which I think is a good question. I know that will be a long answer, so I'm not going to have y'all answer that, but please answer her and go back. I just want to thank everybody who tuned in tonight. I thought it was a great discussion. Y'all Delta sisters.
Don't forget
to get the gloves. You got both conversations and a journey of transformation. Yes. So, and thanks for your last statement, RG, because tomorrow night I have the nurses that will be in here that have three children, and we're going to walk through their home and show you how to navigate their household and how they navigate during this crisis. So for all you parents out there who have kids, tune in tomorrow. We're going to have a camera over in their house, and it's going to be mom and pop, Helen and Clarence, with their three kids, Sophia, Savannah, and Clarence Jr., and we're going to show you their world during the day of the era of being quarantined for the coronavirus. So
you're doing a great job, Charlie, giving us information, by the way. So I really appreciate you using your platform and your talent and all that goodness that's up in you around your brand of Love With the Way You Live to give us information in the time you need. So thank you very much.
There you go. Oh, we would have seen. All right. Good night, everybody. Y'all take care and continue to love the way you live.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.